Hello and welcome to the Eat PhD Team podcast, the podcast here to help you with your relationship with food and body by giving you evidence-based techniques to support yourself with a sprinkling of feminism, a dash of dismantling diet culture and a side of vulnerability as we share our own messy lives with you. I'm Emilia, a registered nutritionist and PhD with the sole purpose of making your life happier and healthier. If you love it, please do go wild and share it. And if you're ready for support with our coaching, details are in the show notes. Hello and welcome to episode number 287 of the Eat PhD Team podcast, the first solo episode of the podcast of 2024. You are so welcome to my dulcet tones for the next 20 to 30 minutes. I recently was asked, can you direct me to your podcast on restriction? And I said, sure, give me 2 minutes. Let me find those links, send them over to you. As I scurried away into my Spotify, I realised that, alas, there were no episodes on restriction. I think we speak about restriction in the context of hypothalamic amenorrhea regularly, and we answer questions on restriction on the Team Q&A Thursday podcasts. And yet, never have I done a full episode specifically around restriction. And it's really, really important because I think when we speak about restriction, often people switch off unless they are people who have hypothalamic amenorrhea or are in smaller bodies, and we associate with restriction with, you know, very lean or struggles with restriction with people who are on the leaner side, and we negate to discuss the realities of what restriction looks like across the board. Why we restrict, how we restrict, the outcomes, and ultimately how to change it. So this podcast, yes, will be directly relatable to those people who feel that they are quite tightly controlled, and maybe that restriction comes with over-exercising and are maybe constantly on the leaner side but are chronically trying to stay leaner. But this also relates to people of all sizes. Many people are in a state of restriction, and as a result of that state of restriction, are also in a state of overeating. But it may well be driven by the same thing. Ultimately, something that you'll have heard probably all of us say at some point in time is that it doesn't matter how much you do, how much work you do on your overeating, if you're someone who overeats. If you're hungry and trying to overcome overeating, it's going to be extremely, extremely hard. So managing your restriction, managing your nutritional regulation is the first step at Eat PhD. It's a fundamental part of all of the strands of regulation that we support our clients with at Eat PhD. And if you're someone who struggles with it yourself, it's a fundamental thing that, although is easier said than done, is something that you need to work on. Before we delve into the restriction side of things, just a little bit of discussion around word choice and what certain words actually mean. Because restriction, dietary restriction, is often used as like this umbrella term. And dietary restriction is literally undereating in the physiological sense. So dietary restriction is eating fewer calories than we require. On top of this, there's a term that we use called dietary restraint. And dietary restraint is the attempt to restrict what you eat. So dietary restraint doesn't always look like a calorie deficit. Dietary restraint might be restricting, you know, food groups, food types, and to some degree, practicing a bit of dietary restraint can be pretty healthy. Dietary restraint, you know, flexible dietary restraint might look like, okay, I had pizza last night, so tonight I'm going to have roasted vegetables and protein and rice. I'm being very kind of, cliche in my example food choices here, right? But dietary restraint is classed as extreme when there are many rules around your diet, that are quite demanding and require this kind of constant vigilance, this constant awareness of the quote-unquote guidelines or worse, rules, and it can feel quite rigid. And often when we fall into this more extreme dietary restraint, with or without dietary restriction, with or without that calorie deficit, it's this type of dietary restraint that encourages binge eating episodes, that leads to things like food preoccupation and has a lot of the negative health outcomes. And we'll talk a little bit about those. Dietary restraint, like I said, doesn't have to look like dietary restriction or calorie deficit. You might experience dietary restraint by excluding certain food types, low fat, low carb, having this kind of dichotomous thinking around food, having foods that you can have, having foods that you can't, having a low food variety. So you see this a lot, and sometimes this is unintentional just because it's routine. But ask yourself, if you went to the supermarket, what happens when you go to the supermarket? Do you always buy the same things? Or if I said to you, okay, you're going to go in this week, you're going to eat totally differently this week, how would that feel? How would it feel to go into the bread aisle and pick a different type of carbs if you even go to the bread aisle? Would that feel uncomfortable for you? How would it feel for me to say, okay, go into the supermarket and think about, how does my body feel? What are my preferences leading me towards right now? What would I enjoy eating right now? And what would support my values right now? Something that we often find with people who restrict or have this dietary restraint at ETPHD when they come to us, whether or not they're dieting or not, is that when we ask them to do something like this sometimes, or go into the supermarket and ask them, what do you really want? It can be quite overwhelming because for so long people have practiced some sort of dietary restraint, and the idea of body food choice congruence, of eating what allows you to feel good, of, you know, allowing yourself to eat according to your preferences is like, no, like it feels very, very overwhelming. And if this is you, like it's not, there's nothing wrong with you, but it is something to look at and think, okay, can I start incorporating a little bit more variety into my diet? And again, this is regardless of whether you're or not you're in a calorie deficit. Restraint of food can also look like only allowing flexibility in your food on certain days. So Monday to Thursday or Monday to Friday lunchtime, you eat exactly what you've made. No flexibility. It doesn't matter if someone's brought in, you know, birthday cake for someone and it's your favourite, it's carrot cake, cream cheese frosting, on a Tuesday. You love it, but you only have cake on a Friday. And so you spend the afternoon thinking about that cake that you didn't allow yourself to eat. Or you spend the afternoon glorifying yourself because you said no to the cake even though you really wanted it. Again, there are going to be times where, especially if you're on a fat loss journey, you can't say yes to cake every single day outside of your calorie deficit. You can if it's in your calorie deficit, but that will get a bit tricky. Restraint also looks like being unable to eat out last minute. So if you were going to, say for example, you were going to go for a walk with your friend at the weekend and they text you on, you know, Sunday morning and said, oh, do you want to go for brunch first because I don't have anything in the house, and then we can go for a walk, and you panic and it feels really uncomfortable for you and you don't know what's going to be on the menu and it makes you feel anxious, then that looks a little bit like restraint, dietary restraint. Another really common one is having like claimed intolerances that are not medically necessary. So, oh, I'm intolerant to, someone told me they're intolerant to sweetener recently, someone on Instagram. Or I'm intolerant to lactose. But no, I don't, but like it's not genuinely medically necessary. Of course, there are some people with food intolerances that, you know, don't have a specific test to quote unquote prove that they have this food intolerance, because food intolerance tests don't work. Aside from the clinical test for celiac. Or maybe you are gluten-free or you have more orthorexic traits. This is what we would all, like, these are all things that we look at when we look at, okay, what is someone's dietary restraint like? Because when we're looking at relationships with food, finding peace with food, reducing this kind of food preoccupation and or overeating, we're looking for healthy food guidelines as opposed to unhealthy restriction and restraint. Healthy food guidelines might look like, I'm going to aim to eat three to four servings of protein a day, and I'm going to aim to eat fruit or vegetables with most of my meals, and I'm going to be mindful of ultra processed food intake, but I'm going to allow them in when I really want them in. Unhealthy restriction would look like, I don't allow myself to eat after my dinner, or I fast until lunchtime, or I have no ultra processed foods or no sugar, or I don't keep that food in the house because I can't trust myself around it. The latter is driven by fear, anxiety, guilt, shame, control. The former is driven by self-care, self-respect, self-nourishment. And if you think about your life long term, what do you think is going to be more serving for you long term? A life of food and exercise driven by nourishment and care and respect, or a life of food driven by fear, anxiety and guilt? Now, you might be listening to this and thinking, yeah, but restriction is necessary for me, or restraint is necessary for me, because it's helping me stick to my calorie deficit, or I feel stressed when I have all of this choice around food, so it stops me from feeling stressed, or I don't trust myself around food, so this just lets me feel more in control, and you feel like it's helping you in some way. And at ETPHD, you know, we do a lot of work with the people that we work with around the purpose of our behaviours, the purpose of restriction, the purpose of overeating, the purpose of self-criticism. And often we think that we want to get rid of something, but then when we think about it, we're like, actually, I feel like I'm telling myself this serves a purpose, and it does. It feels safe to you. But ultimately, this kind of extreme dietary restriction and or restraint is keeping you in a state of dysregulation. Nutritional dysregulation, physiological dysregulation, often psychological dysregulation, and for many of you, overeating. And I can't express this enough, if you regularly overeat or binge eat, the most important thing you can do is to stop this restriction. But even regardless of this, there are some side effects of restraint and restriction, and sometimes there are side effects that I think people don't often think about. Let me just reel some off. If you practice extreme restraint or restriction, you might experience food preoccupation. So you're distracted, you're thinking about what you're going to eat at your next meal constantly. You are thinking about calories, you're thinking about what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat. It maybe distracts you from your work. Dark story time. When I was competing, I think it was even when I was in one of my off seasons, which is, I think, even worse. I remember I was tracking at the time, and I was in the office when I used to lecture, and I don't know how many calories I had for the day, and it's relevant, but I remember sitting there at my desk, probably when I should have been working, although I didn't really take breaks because, you know, hustle culture, so I'm sure I was allowed this little gap. Anyway, took me away from work, and I was sat on my fitness pal typing in, oh, if I reduce my oats by 3 grams, then I can have some more Oreos in my oats, because that was in the days where, like, oats were just, like, pimped out with, like, Oreos and Reese's and whatever else, and you'd end up with, like, an oat bowl with, like, 30 grams of oats or something, which is, like, a half serving, like, if you go to the packet. And I remember looking back thinking, I remember at the time thinking, oh, look at me, I'm so flexible with my diet. And yet I was sat there planning my supper when I was at work in the day, because I had such rigid restriction around, like, I had restraint in some ways with the food that I was allowing, and definitely restriction in the sense of, you know, calorie intake. So restraint and or restriction can lead to food preoccupation. It can lead to malnutrition. If you're like, okay, I'm going to have a fat-free diet and you don't eat any polyunsaturated fat over time, we require essential fats in our diet. Like, we require them. We can't make them in our bodies. We need to get them from our diet. Or if you have, you know, every day you eat the same foods, regardless of whether they are quote-unquote healthy or not, if you're not getting food variety in there, you're at risk of not getting enough nutrients or sufficient variety of nutrients. That can also impact our gut health. You might experience low sex drive or low body image. Fears around certain food can impact your social life because you feel unable to eat with others. You feel preoccupied by it when you do. Can impact your cognition, your brain health. Extreme restriction or calorie restriction can lead to hypothalamic amenorrhea, hormonal changes, irregular cycles. You're more likely to fall into a binge cycle. You're more likely to be distracted. You're more likely to experience a sense of what we call dysphoria, but it's kind of like a general sense of unease. Irritability, personality changes, apathy, GI distress, gut disturbances, cold intolerance, excessive exercise. Now, you might be listening to this thinking, I don't have excessive exercise, I don't have irregular cycles, I don't have an intolerance to cold, I've got a quote-unquote healthy BMI, so this isn't me. Again, this is just some of them. Some of these are a result of low body weight, and some of these are a result of the act of dietary restraint or restriction. And nobody talks about it, because it's kind of like, oh, well, you're dieting, so you need to do these things. No, you don't. A lot of our clients that eat a PhD diet, none of them practice dietary restraint by the time they're in a healthful diet cycle with us. Never. They have some levels of, you know, values-based decision-making when it comes to like what their food choices are and when they eat. But it's healthful restraint. It's not extreme restraint. And again, you might be thinking, okay, well, I am eating enough. And my food variety is not restrained at all, so this definitely isn't me. Okay, well, there are other types of restriction that can also have negative health outcomes. Sometimes these coincide with dietary restriction and restraint. Sometimes they don't. Restricting joy from food, from life. Restricting your pleasure, restricting your rest. Restricting mess, restricting emotions, restricting uncertainty by looking for control. Restriction shows up in many ways for us, and ultimately, it's usually because it provides some sort of sense of control. So for some people, they might say, well, I just restrict because I'm trying to lose weight. Okay, fine. A question would be, if you're in a healthy body fat range, why are you trying to lose weight? Again, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's a question to ask yourself. Another reason we restrict is to avoid gaining weight or to avoid getting quote-unquote fat. And sometimes we use that as a scapegoat, like the societally normalised scapegoat for the fact that we're really looking for a sense of control in some way or a sense of achievement or self-worth. You know, societally we are praised for having willpower. We're praised for being smaller. We're praised by diet culture for being thinner. Many of us have this internalized weight bias where we may think that being smaller is more worthy, better than in some way. And so regardless of your body size, this restriction or restraint, it gives us a sense of achievement. Because look at our willpower, look at our motivation. There's also this guilt and shame associated with honouring hunger and nourishing your body. And this might be societal. It's like, oh, you see these ridiculous like reels and stuff that are like, if I honoured my body, I would eat 10 donuts. Well, then you need to work on your body image because that's not honouring your body. Anyway, side note entirely. sometimes we feel guilt and shame with honouring our needs, whether it be hunger, whether it be nourishment, whether it be rest, emotions, because we don't feel deserving. We feel unworthy of satisfaction. We feel unworthy of pleasure. We attach shame to pleasure. We attach shame to rest. And this restriction helps us on the surface manage this. Maybe it's because we have a fear of certain foods. Maybe it's because we have shame around eating certain foods in front of others. There are a lot of reasons as well, like within the kind of biopsychosocial range that we might restrict. Stress or illness, dieting, perfectionism, predisposition to anxiety, differences in dopamine circuits have been found between people who have practiced extreme dietary restraint and those who don't. Times of reproductive change, this happens quite a lot when, especially in women, when their bodies change. So puberty, perinatal, perimenopausal, we see increases for this drive to restrict or practice dietary restraint at these times. Again, potentially because of this drive or want for control when our bodies feel out of control. The same thing could be happening in people who are suffering with illness or injury. It can be triggered by environmental changes. Maybe you're super busy or low income, so you don't have a choice, or feel like you don't have a choice. Some people don't. It can be driven by low self-esteem. You know, societal expectations of thinness, social pressure, and so much more. There are so many reasons why we might restrict. And yet, ultimately we say, oh, it's because I want to lose fat, or it's because I want to maintain my weight. Let me remind you that people who eat intuitively tend to have a lower BMI. People think that those who meticulously track and practice extreme dietary restriction and restraint are more likely to see fat loss and more likely to have a low body mass index, but that's not actually the case. We know that majority of diets fail. Not all, something like 80%-ish. Better diets, better success rates. But we know that people who score highly on intuitive eating scores are more likely to have lower BMIs. And yet society has kind of conditioned us to think the more extreme your restriction and restraint, the more willpower that you have, the more motivational you are, the more successful you are, the leaner you're going to be. And it becomes this vicious cycle. So even if you've got someone saying to you, the best thing you can do for all of your health outcomes, physiological, psychological, is to stop restricting and dietary restraint, you say to yourself, no, that's not for me. That's not for me. And even if it's resulting in you having irregular cycles, nope, not for me. Or it results in you binge eating, nope, not for me. Those who chronically restrict are more likely to be in a state of chronic dysregulation. More often than not, find themselves in this state of hyperarousal. So this kind of manifests as feeling more anxious, more stressed, often the kind of busy, got lots to do type of situation. Often too, these people are more likely to be those who overwork or try to overachieve as another means of regulating themselves, feeling worthy, feeling good enough. It's like this, especially at the moment, I feel like we've got this really toxic combination of diet culture, which is definitely feels like it's coming back. I'm laughing because it's uncomfortable, not because I think it's funny, obviously. Anyway, we've got this combination at the moment of like diet culture times hustle culture, and they both kind of target the same people. Both of them are targeting people that feel not enough as it stands under the guise of health and achievement. You can totally diet, lose body fat without subscribing to diet culture, and you can absolutely achieve and be successful in your career without subscribing to hustle culture and having an ice bath every morning and working, you know, 12 hours a day and be better than everyone else. Like, You can achieve fat loss, you can achieve success without aligning to these narratives, these societal narratives that say, that pick on your feelings of not enoughness and guilt you into being more rigid, working harder. And like I said, these narratives both attack, on the whole, people who feel not enough often and are often more likely to be those people who are chronically stuck in that state of hyperarousal. And if this is you, if you relate to this feeling of like always feeling like you need to be doing things, and you get anxiety when you rest, and you feel guilty when you slow down, and you couldn't just have like a slow morning one morning, I'm talking, you know, you might not be able to do that because you have kids or other demands on your life. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that incessant drive, like you struggle to sleep a little bit longer, you struggle to treat yourself well. If you feel like you fall into that category, then listen to episode number 262 of the ETPHD Team podcast around neurosomatics with Katie, because that type of work, we all at ETPHD support our clients with self-regulation and nervous system regulation, whether that be down-regulation tools, up-regulation tools, supporting people to widen their window of tolerance, this space in our nervous system where we are kind of thriving, where things feel a little bit easier. And doing this type of work will really, really help you in managing things like your need to restrict, to find a sense of control, to overwork. Or on the flip side, if you're someone who finds themselves more in that downregulated state, it will help you with lifting your mood, with a drive to exercise, a drive to nourish your body with healthy food. So nutritional regulation is super, super important, but so is behavioural, spiritual, psychological, when it comes to finding a more peaceful relationship with food. Do some somatic work or some other self-regulation work. This might look like a bit of breath work. Katie gives some examples on that podcast. Most of the team have got examples of this on their Instagram pages. Get curious about your relationship with control, restriction, rest. Notice any anxiety or discomfort that comes up around letting go of restriction. So if I said to you right now, okay, you're going to eat regularly, how does that feel? You're going to stop. If you are, say you're dieting right now, and I said to you, okay, you're going to eat twice as big a breakfast in terms of calories, twice as big a lunch in terms of calories, and your usual dinner. How does that feel? And you might say, well, it's going to take me out of my calorie deficit. Not if you're overeating regularly, it's not. It's going to probably reduce your calorie intake. Something to note is if you have been chronically restricting for a long time and you're in a leaner body, then your hunger regulation might be off. So me saying to you, stop restriction and restraint, is not immediately going to look like you honouring your hunger and fullness. It might initially look like establishing a regular eating pattern and sufficiently eating enough. And this might not always be in line with what you feel in terms of hunger and fullness right now, but over time, and the way that we do it at ETPHD is we establish this nutritional regulation and this regular eating pattern first, and then we bring in some work around beginning to honour your hunger and fullness again. But you can immediately start to incorporate some more variety, eating at different times, and noticing any anxiety that comes up around that, and practicing some downregulation, some soothing, and around those potential feelings of hyperarousal, anxiety, etc. Same goes if you are in a larger body, you might experience what we call leptin resistance, and again, this dysregulation of hunger. And so going straight into honouring hunger and fullness might not be the right thing for you. But again, establishing a regular eating pattern is likely the best step. Then we move on to honouring your hunger and fullness. Also, if this is you, journal. Ask yourself, what does restriction give to me? What does restraint give to me? How has it served me up until now? Identify your food rules. Develop a plan to break them. It's not going to be like, okay, I'm going to just allow myself to eat everything whenever I want, give myself quote-unquote unconditional permission to eat, especially if you don't understand fully what unconditional permission to eat is. There are other podcasts within the ETPHD library. If you search unconditional permission to eat, you'll get lots of podcasts on that. But it might look like, okay, I'm going to go to the supermarket and I always buy, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. Why can I not think of an example now? I'm just picturing an entire supermarket. You go to the supermarket and you think, okay, I always buy wholemeal bread. Okay, I'm going to go in and I'm going to actually look around the bread aisles, smell all the fresh baked goods and decide, okay, well, what other thing tickles my fancy? What other carbohydrate source floats my boat? Maybe you always buy the same peanut butter. Okay, well, what other spreads? I can't think of anything else other than tickles my fancy. So we're going with that again. And yes, it can be quite scary. Maybe you just break yourself into that gently. Work on your weight bias and conversations that you have with others around bodies. Like, are you glorifying thinness above everything else? Do you equate thinness to success, to motivation, to admiration, to worth? Read around what weight bias is, weight stigma. Read around the internalized thin ideal and open yourself up to those potentials. Develop trust in your internal hunger and fullness cues and your emotions. I did a meditation track this morning. It was a Tara Brach meditation, who I really like. And it was only, I think, 12 minutes. And it's similar to some of the meditations that I run with ETPHD Monthly and ETPHD clients, where there's not a specific focus other than the focus being, let's get curious about what's in your body today. And it might be that you take some breath into your heart space and you just notice, what is my heart doing today? Does my heart feel closed off? Does it feel heavy? Does it feel light? What does it feel to imagine love in my body? What might I be avoiding? And just getting curious about these things is really important. You can't expect to reconnect with your body if you don't ever give yourself time to reconnect with your body. And so as long as, like, you know, me saying develop trust in your hunger and fullness, it's so abstract. You might be thinking, I don't know how to do that. I've not listened to my hunger and fullness for, you know, 20 years. Okay, well, let's just get curious about what even it, does it feel like to be in your body? Let's start there. Then over time, we can look at emotions. We can look at hunger and fullness. We can look at how that changes through the day. We can use the hunger scale. And let's work towards more of this internal regulation. Our choice is being driven by the inside rather than the outside. And even hearing that, you might think, no, that's too much. I don't trust myself to do that. But I've worked with hundreds, and I mean, at ETPHD, we've worked with thousands of people in this position who are genuinely shocked when they reach a place of peace with food in their body, and they're honouring their signals, they're honouring their needs, they're honouring what their body's asking for. And they're not doing it from this externally rigid, restricted approach. One final thing that I want to add before I finish up is two-stranded. The first strand, if you identify as someone who overeats and has overeating and or binging habits or behaviours, think about how long you've been stuck with overeating and for how long you've been trying this dietary restriction and or restraint protocol. You have been on and off, on and off, on and off for however long that is, months or years, maybe even decades, where you've tried this restriction and you've developed this all or nothing mentality so that when you eat a piece of cake, you feel like you've messed up. So you eat more and more and more. And then the next day you go back onto excessive restriction and restraint. And then that's how that works for about 5 days and then the same thing happens. Or maybe it works for a month and the same thing happens. At some point, you have to accept that it's not you. It's not your willpower. A large proportion of this, not everything, but a large proportion of this is down to that restriction and restraint. If you allowed yourself to eat a small piece of carrot cake every other day or every day, the chances of you having a piece on a Friday night and then eating half the cake and feeling bad for it would be vastly reduced. You know that if you're being honest with yourself. And I know that it's difficult to go against the way that you've done things this for so long. On the flip side, if you're someone who doesn't overeat, doesn't binge eat, but you've practiced this restriction for so long, I recognise that this for you feels safe. This for you feels regulating. And it feels like the scariest thing in the world to let go, or what feels like to let go of that control. But it's less control that you need in order to feel more at ease and more at peace. You have to move through that scary part first in order to find that peaceful part. And that's why having a coach or someone that can remind you of your higher purpose, of your values as you move through this, can be so, so helpful. Because everyone panics when they start to eat regularly. Everyone. You feel full. And you might not have felt full in so long. And you might attach guilt or shame to that. Unnecessarily, but understandably. And so you back off. But what you want to be mindful of is going into the yo-yo diet cycle from the other direction. Of finally starting to get more regularity with your food. And then pulling back when it feels like you might be gaining weight. Or it feels unsafe to you. At the end of both of these journeys is peace with food. But in order to get peace with food, you have to manage the rigid dietary restriction and restraint that is driving a lot of your unhelpful behaviours and unhelpful health outcomes. If you have any questions about this, you know that my Instagram messages are always open. My WhatsApp is always open. You can get that from my Instagram bio and from the website. And as always, if you want support, you know where we are. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, if you did, please do feel free to like, share, subscribe, and review. And if you would like to chat to me, then you can find details of my Instagram in the show notes.